produced by the iLab at WBUR Boston.
Once upon a time. Now, I'll bet you that the moment I said those words, you probably leaned forward in your seat and perked up your ears as you wondered, what comes next? It's amazing how powerful storytelling can be. And over the next hour, you'll feel that power as the Boston Symphony Orchestra presents the 2020 Tanglewood Virtual Family Concert. Hey there, everybody. I'm Thomas Wilkins, the Youth and Family Concerts Conductor for the Boston Symphony Orchestra. You know, each year, the Tanglewood Family Concert brings you captivating music. And this year, we're combining that dazzling music with delightful stories. The BSO has teamed up with Circle Round, the beloved storytelling podcast from WBUR, Boston's NPR station. And you're about to hear three very special Circle Round stories written and narrated by host Rebecca Shear and performed by beloved actors from stage and screen. Each story features original music composed by Eric Shimolonis and played by esteemed members of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And our first story is called Every Other Friday. Now, versions of this tale originally come from Mexico. In this adaptation, you'll hear musical accompaniment by BSO's bassist, Benjamin Levy. And now, circle around, everyone, for Every Other Friday.
Not long ago, in a bustling town with a river flowing right down the middle, there lived a baker named Marco. Once upon a time, Marco ran his very own bakery. But while Marco's bake shop got many rave reviews, he never sold enough sweets and treats to make ends meet. So he had to close his doors and had struggled to make a living ever since. Marco lived with his aging mother, his ailing father, and his seven boisterous children in a cramped little house at the edge of town. As the weather grew colder and his family's bellies grew emptier, Marco knew he had to do something.
Ah, I can't let my mother, father, and children starve. I guess I'll just go out into the streets and beg.
Marco put on his worn-out shoes and shabby coat and walked through the town, his threadbare cap upturned in his hand.
Pardon me, miss. Could you spare a coin or two? Sir, any chance you have some extra change?
Some of the townspeople dropped a coin into Marco's cap. Most didn't. Desperate and sad, he kept wandering. Eventually, he found himself standing at the marble steps of a beautiful mansion. The grand building was owned by a rich and powerful countess. And as Marco stared up at the stately pillars and archways, the lofty towers and stained glass windows, he suddenly heard,
"Excuse me!"
a voice.
"Sir, can I help you?"
Marco looked to see whose voice it was, and who should he spy rushing out the front door and hopping down the marble steps but the Countess herself. The aristocratic woman wore a frilly satin dress, lavish jewelry, and fancy leather boots with the highest heels Marco had ever seen.
"Oh, I hope I didn't startle you, sir. It's just that I saw you come trudging up the road just now, and you looked so very sad. Wait a minute."
The Countess tilted her head.
"Do I know you?"
Marco felt his cheeks burn.
"No, ma'am. You don't know me. I'm just another nobody. Sorry to disturb you."
He was about to turn on the heel of his worn-out shoe and shuffle away. But then...
"Wait! I do know you. You're Marco the Baker!"
Marco's body stiffened. No one knew him as Marco the Baker anymore. After all, he'd been forced to shut down his business so very long ago.
"Yes! You're Marco the Baker! Wow! You know, Marco, your bread pudding was to die for. Oh, and your sweet corn cake? Unbelievable! Whatever happened to your bakery.
Marco looked at the ground and gave a shrug.
Let's just say I had to close up shop.
The Countess frowned.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. Do you think you'll ever open up a new one?
Marco stared at the Countess. The truth was, he wanted to open a new bakery more than anything in the world, but he could never afford it.
No, ma'am. I don't think I'll open a new bakery anytime soon.
Well, that's a shame. I would walk 1,000 miles for one of your pecan shortbread cookies. Although not in these shoes, of course.
The Countess pointed to her fancy high-heeled boots. Marco tried to smile.
I thank you for your kind words, madam, but I really should be going.
Nonsense!
The Countess grabbed Marco's hand. He noticed that a dazzling ring encircled each one of her perfectly manicured fingers.
Look, Marco, it seems you've fallen on hard times, and I want to help you. So please, come inside.
Marco followed the elegant woman up the marble steps, through the front door, and into a cavernous room with vaulted ceilings and a crystal chandelier. The Countess motioned for Marco to sit down on a plush velvet chair.
So tell me, who else lives with you in your home? You do have a home, don't you?
Marco nodded.
Luckily I do, though not a very big one. I share it with my frail old parents and my 7 rambunctious kids.
Wow, that's quite a full house. But good to know. Wait right here, please.
The Countess sashayed out of the room. Minutes later, she came breezing back in, trailed by a butler. The butler was holding a large sack.
Inside this sack, Marco, you will find gifts for you, your mother, your father, and your 7 rambunctious kids. I've packed some clothing, some groceries, some money. But before I give you these gifts, I need you to promise me one thing.
Marco's heart raced.
Of course, Countess. I'll do anything.
Very well. I need you to promise me that you'll come back to my house every 2 weeks, on Fridays. Do that, and I will give you exactly what you and your family need.
You have my word, Countess. I'll come back to your house every other Friday. Is there anything I can do to repay you?
The Countess grinned.
Perhaps you can bake me a batch of those pecan shortbread cookies someday. Now, take this sack back to your parents and kids. And good luck, Marco the Baker.
For the first time in a long time, Marco had a spring in his step as he traveled back to his cramped little house at the edge of town. When he showed his family the clothing, groceries, and money the Countess gave him, his children squealed, and his parents clapped their weathered old hands with delight. 2 weeks later, on a Friday afternoon, Marco made good on his promise to the Countess and returned to her mansion. But when he went bounding up the steps and rapped the big iron knocker on the door, the butler told him the Countess was not at home.
Oh, I thought for sure she'd be here. Well, did she happen to leave a message for me for Marco the Baker?
The butler thought for a moment.
Actually, she did. She told me I should give you this.
The butler reached out a gloved hand and presented Marco with a small paper bag. And when Marco looked inside the bag, he was astounded to see 1 loaf of bread. He shook his head at the butler.
I'm sorry, sir, but are you sure this is all the Countess wanted you to give me? 1 loaf of bread?
Indeed, sir. 1 loaf of bread.
Marco was confused. Granted, the loaf of bread was beautiful, all fresh and crusty and perfectly round. But the Countess knew that Marco had a very full house. Did she actually think one loaf of bread would be enough to feed him, his parents, and his 7 children? And did she actually think it would last the family 2 whole weeks? Marco thanked the butler with a sigh, then started back toward his house. On the way, he came to the river that ran through the middle of town. Beside the river was a grain mill. Suddenly, Marco had an idea. He tipped his threadbare cap at the miller, who was hard at work grinding corn to make flour.
Hello, ma'am. I wonder, could I please have some of your corn?
The miller grinned.
Of course. It's 1 silver coin for 1 bag of corn.
I see.
Marco scratched his chin.
Unfortunately, I don't have any cash on me right now. But is there any chance you could trade me 1 bag of corn for this?
Marco reached inside the paper bag and lifted out the loaf of bread the Countess had given him. The miller's eyes widened when she saw how fresh, crusty, and perfectly round the loaf was.
I'd be happy to trade you a bag of corn for such beautiful bread. Here you go.
Once the trade was complete, Marco continued on his way.
This bag of corn will go a whole lot farther than that silly loaf of bread would have. I can cook with this corn, I can bake with it. I can't say it'll last me and my family a whole 2 weeks, but it's worth a try.
When Marco got home, he told his family everything that happened. His parents were puzzled.
But, son, if the Countess wanted you to have 1 loaf of bread, you should have kept the 1 loaf of bread.
Your mother's right, Marco. The Countess was so generous back when you met her, sending you home with all those wonderful gifts. Why trade her latest gift away?
Marco threw up his hands.
Because that 1 loaf of bread wasn't enough to feed this family. The fancy schmancy Countess obviously has no idea about how the other half lives. And we can't live by bread alone.
2 Fridays later, Marco returned to the mansion. Once more, the Countess was not at home.
But she did tell me to give you this.
Marco took the brown paper bag from the butler and looked inside.
Again, seriously, 1 loaf of bread?
Indeed, sir. 1 loaf of bread.
Marco thanked the butler and made a beeline for the mill. The miller seemed especially excited to see him.
Let me guess. You'd like to trade 1 loaf of bread for 1 bag of corn?
Yes, indeed.
Terrific! That bread is amazing. Here you go.
This went on for months. Every other Friday, Marco would swing by the mansion, the Countess would not be home, and the butler would hand over a brown paper bag containing
1 loaf of bread.
Then Marco would trade the bread for corn from the miller, who, he noticed, seemed more and more thrilled to see him each time he showed up.
You have no idea how much I love this bread. Here you go.
Finally, the Friday arrived when Marco rapped the big iron knocker on the mansion's front door. And who should answer?
Marco!
But the Countess.
My goodness! It's been forever since I saw you last. What are you doing here?
Marco was perplexed by the Countess's question, but tried not to show it.
Well, just like I promised you back when we met, I've been coming to your house every other Friday. You're never around, so the butler always gives me a brown paper bag containing 1 loaf of bread.
The Countess crinkled her forehead.
Right. About that. May I ask, what have you been doing with all the bread I've given you?
Marco didn't want to offend the Countess by admitting he'd been trading away the bread for something far more useful.
What have I been doing with all the bread, you ask? Well, I've been taking it from the butler and thanking him for it, of course. Then, you know, going on my merry way.
I see. Well, in that case...
The Countess pointed at Marco's worn-out shoes and shabby coat.
Why are you still so poor and miserable?
Marco could hardly believe his ears. He was still so poor and miserable because all the Countess had been giving him all this time was one measly loaf of bread. But he wasn't about to tell her that.
I guess I'm still poor and miserable because such is my lot in life. I lost my bakery, and in the process, I guess I lost my way, too.
Marco hoped the Countess would be satisfied with his answer. He could tell from the gleam in her eye that she wasn't.
Well, Marco, if you truly went home with the bread I've been giving you, and you ate the bread I've been giving you, I'm certain you wouldn't be so poor and miserable anymore. And, I suspect, you'd find your way, too.
By now, Marco was so befuddled he couldn't even answer. He just lifted his shoulder in a half shrug and tried to smile.
All right. Listen to me, Marco. Today, I will give you another loaf of bread. But you must promise me that you'll eat it. Because if you don't, I will never help you and your family again. Do you promise?
Marco was beyond bewildered. But what else could he say except...
Yes, I promise.
Then he hung his head and walked away from the mansion with yet another brown paper bag containing yet another loaf of bread tucked beneath his arm.
What in the world is the Countess thinking? I can't go home and feed this bread to my family. In no time at all, it'll be gone. And then what do we do? Dance to the rhythm of our own grumbling bellies? No offense to my generous patron, but I'm taking this bread to the miller and trading it for corn. It's the most practical thing to do.
But when Marco reached the river, he discovered that the mill was closed. He called out to the miller, who was outside packing up boxes.
Hey there! Excuse me! Are you really closing up shop?
When the miller spotted Marco, her cheeks blushed.
Actually, yes. Would you believe I've managed to bring in so much money these past few months that I don't need to stay open anymore? I can retire. Thanks again for all the bread, by the way.
As Marco continued home, his shoulders slumped.
Oh, man. Somehow the miller's made enough money to close her business, yet I can't make enough money to open a business. Oh, dear. I guess I'll just do as the Countess said. I'll take this bread home and eat it.
When Marco trudged through the door of his cramped little house, his mother and father gazed at him with concern.
Why the furrowed brow, son? Did your trip to the mansion go okay?
Did you trade your loaf of bread for a bag of corn from the miller?
Marco shook his head.
Actually, no. The miller has gotten lucky and made enough money to close down her mill. So all I've brought home is the Countess's loaf of bread, which we'd better eat, because if we don't, the Countess said she'll never help us again.
Marco plopped down in a chair, then called his children to the table and began slicing into the fresh, crusty, perfectly round loaf of bread. But the moment he did...
Ooh!
His knife hit something.
What's going on here? There must be something stuck inside this loaf.
Marco reached inside the bread and rooted around. Eventually, his hand found something hard and round. And when he pulled it out, do you know what it was? A gold coin. Marco held the coin up for his family to see. As the gold piece glittered and gleamed in the light, all of a sudden, Marco saw the light. Inside every fresh, crusty, perfectly round loaf of bread the Countess had given him, she had hidden a gold coin. And when Marco traded those loaves to the miller wound up with all those gold coins. So instead of Marco collecting enough money to open a new business, the miller collected enough money to close hers. You may recall that when Marco first met the Countess, the well-heeled and kind-hearted woman promised she would give him and his family exactly what they needed. And now, Marco finally understood that all this time, she was.
Hey again, Thomas Wilkins here. The next story in our 2020 Tanglewood Family Concert is called The Farmer's Coin. It was inspired by a folktale from the Korean Peninsula, a piece of land surrounded almost entirely by water in East Asia. And playing the music in this story is BSO violist Daniel Kim. And now, circle around, everyone, for The Farmer's Coin.
There once was a rice farmer. The humble and diligent woman worked so hard that every autumn she would harvest at least a dozen bags of rice. That's 12 heaping sacks of grain, filled all the way to the brim. But one year, the growing season was especially difficult. It was either too cold or too hot, too dry or too wet, and come harvest time, the rice farmer had little to show for it. In fact, after scraping together all the rice grains she had painstakingly picked, she could barely fill a basket, let alone a bag.
Oh, dear. With so little rice, I'll never make it through the long, cold winter ahead. Whatever will I do?
The farmer lived beside a smooth, tranquil lake in a small, thatched roof cottage. Across the lake was the sprawling mansion of a wealthy landlord. The farmer didn't know her prosperous neighbor very well, but suddenly she had an idea.
I know! I'll ask the landlord if he can help me out. He must have thousands of bags of rice in that enormous house of his. Surely he can spare just one bag for a neighbor in need?
The farmer climbed into her rickety rowboat and paddled across the lake to the mansion. A servant led her into the dining room, where the well-to-do landlord was lunching at a long table piled with enough delicious food to feed the entire village. The landlord slurped some soup, then dabbed his mouth with a silk napkin as the farmer made her simple request.
So, let me get this straight. You've been a rice farmer for years and years, yet you're asking me for one bag of rice? Why?
The farmer blushed.
Well, you see, sir, the growing season was so difficult this year. I worked myself to the bone day in and day out. But the weather just wouldn't cooperate. It was either too cold or too hot or too dry or...
Right. I get it. Listen, I will give you one bag of rice, farmer. But I won't give it to you for free. You must repay me with a dozen bags of rice. By the spring.
The farmer was confused.
But, sir, the next rice harvest isn't until next fall, practically a year from now. How can I get you a dozen bags of rice by springtime?
The landlord sipped some hot tea and fixed the farmer with an icy stare.
Well, you're the farmer, not me. You'll figure it out.
Then he snapped his fingers and had a servant escort the farmer out of the mansion. The farmer placed the landlord's bag of rice inside her rickety rowboat and skimmed across the smooth, tranquil lake with a mind that was anything but smooth and tranquil.
Ugh! How in the world am I supposed to scrounge up 12 bags of rice by the spring? Now that the growing season is over, it's not like I can grow more rice, and I definitely can't afford to buy more rice. Oh, well. At least I have one bag of rice to help me weather the cold, long winter ahead.
To the farmer's surprise, that cold, long winter turned out to be early. That very night, the temperature plummeted. Snow tumbled from the sky, and the smooth, tranquil lake between the farmer's cottage and the landlord's mansion began to freeze over. With the wind howling outside, the farmer took her meager basket of rice and poured it into the landlord's bag. Next, she lit a crackling fire. Then she reached into the bag, scooped some grains of rice into a pot, and set the pot to boil. Minutes later, she ladled the fluffy, fragrant clumps of steaming rice into a bowl. But before she could tuck in to her dinner...
Who'd be out at this hour? In this weather?
The farmer undid the latch of the door and found a spindly old woman shivering in the snow.
Thank you for answering the door, young lady. I was out walking and I lost my way. My fingers and toes have gone positively numb. And I'm so very hungry.
The farmer fetched a blanket and wrapped it around the woman's trembling shoulders.
Come, sit at the table. I just cooked up a nice warm bowl of rice, and you're more than welcome to have it.
Thank you.
The farmer watched with wide eyes as the wispy old woman devoured the entire bowl.
That was delicious. But I still feel so weak. May I please have some more?
So the farmer scooped some more rice from the landlord's bag and boiled up another bowl.
More, please.
Then another.
Just a bit more, please.
And another. Before the farmer knew it, she was all out of rice. The landlord's entire bag was empty. At last, the old woman rose to her feet.
Oh, good farmer. I am so grateful for your hospitality. To show you my thanks, I offer you this.
The woman clutched the farmer's fingers and placed something in her palm.
I believe it may come in handy.
Then the woman shuffled out the door and disappeared into the frosty night. The farmer looked down to see what the old woman had given her. It was a smooth, dull coin, and it was covered with strange writing. The farmer had no idea what it said or where it was from. But now that she was all out of rice, and she still owed the landlord 12 whole bags...
I guess I might as well take this coin to market tomorrow. Maybe I'll find a collector who'd like to buy it. But first, I'd better hit the hay. Since I skipped dinner... Perhaps a good night of sleep will help me forget about my grumbling belly.
As the farmer headed off to her bedroom, she tossed the strange coin into the empty rice bowl, where it landed with a clink. The next morning, when the farmer came to the kitchen, she was greeted by a surprising sight. Her rice bowl was still on the table, but it was no longer empty. Instead, it was piled high with fluffy, fragrant, steaming rice.
I could have sworn this bowl was empty last night. That old woman gobbled up every grain of rice I had.
As the sweet, enticing aroma of steamed rice filled the farmer's nose, she felt her mouth water and heard her stomach growl. Then she hunched over the table and scarfed down the rice by the fistful. When the rice was all gone, she spotted something in the bottom of the bowl.
What in the world?
The farmer reached into the bowl and picked up something hard and round and smooth. Any guesses what it was? That's right. It was the coin the old woman had given her. The strange one that the farmer had tossed into the rice bowl before going to bed.
Wait a minute. The old woman told me this coin would come in handy. But could a dull, tarnished coin with weird writing actually fill a bowl with... No! What am I talking about? That's way too good to be true! Right?
She snatched up the coin from the bottom of the empty bowl, then plunked it back in. And do you know what happened? Just like that, the bowl filled up again with fluffy, fragrant, steaming rice.
Whoa! This coin the old woman gave me is magic! Wait a minute!
The farmer fished the coin out from the bowl of rice. Then she sprinted to the tiny and cluttered back room where she kept her farming gear. She grabbed an empty rice bag and dropped the coin into the bag. Within seconds, the bag was bursting with glistening grains of rice, fresh as if they had just been harvested.
That's it! I know just what I'll do!
The farmer used the magic coin to fill 12 bags of rice. But even though that's exactly what she owed the landlord, she didn't bring the rice across the frozen lake to his massive mansion. Instead, she pulled on her snow boots and carried the bags to the marketplace, where she handed them out to other hard-working villagers who might struggle through the freezing winter months.
An entire bag of rice?
For me?
This will last all winter.
My family will be so happy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, friends. I'm so pleased I can share my good fortune with you. Enjoy.
The farmer returned to the marketplace day after day, giving a bag of rice to anyone who needed it. And when the landlord caught wind of what she was doing, he was mad and mystified.
Who does that farmer think she is? She owes me a dozen bags of rice, yet she's giving rice away to the other peasants for free? How is that possible?
By now, the lake between the landlord's luxurious mansion and the farmer's little cottage was frozen solid. So the landlord laced up his boots and carefully crossed the slick ice until he reached the farmer's door.
Oh! Hello! You must be here for your dozen bags of rice. Come on in. I'll be right back.
The farmer sat the landlord down at her table, then disappeared into the cluttered back room and shut the door. The landlord was curious.
What is she up to back there? Only one way to find out.
The landlord tiptoed to the back room door and pushed it open a crack. When he peeped through the opening, he was astonished by what he saw. The farmer was taking a strange, dull coin and dropping it into empty bag after empty bag. Each time she plopped it in, the empty bag filled up with rice. After the farmer had filled 12 bags of rice, she placed the coin in a little tin box on the shelf. The landlord scurried back to the table. He hopped into his chair just as the farmer emerged from the back room.
Here you go, sir. 1 dozen bags of rice.
Well, what do you know? Here I was, thinking you'd never be able to pay me what you owed. And yet, look at these. Big, beautiful bags. Why, it's almost like magic.
Something like that.
The landlord picked up the bags and carried them across the slippery, frozen lake. Though the wind whipped his cheeks and he kept losing his balance under such a heavy load, the selfish man couldn't help but grin from ear to greedy ear.
Now I know the farmer's secret. That magic coin will be mine, all mine!
Back at his mansion, the landlord scoured his servants' closets for the most raggedy clothes he could find. Once night fell, he put on the clothing, then crept across the frozen lake to the farmer's cottage and knocked on the door. When the farmer answered, she didn't recognize this shabby man clad in rags.
Good evening. May I help you?
I hope you can. I'm a poor fellow who's fallen on hard times. I would give anything for a nice steaming bowl of rice. Any chance you have some?
Actually, I do. Give me just 1 minute.
The farmer led the disguised landlord to the table. Then she grabbed an empty bowl and darted to the back room. When she came out, the bowl was filled with fluffy, fragrant, steaming rice. The disguised landlord wolfed down the rice, then gazed at the farmer with twinkling eyes.
That was delicious. Thank you. You know, in exchange for your generosity, I'd like to do a little something for you. A bit of a cleanup, perhaps? Sweeping? Dusting? Doing the dishes?
The farmer thought for a moment.
That's a very nice offer. If you insist, I guess the back room could use some sprucing up. But no need to go crazy. Just some light sweeping will do.
So the disguised landlord grabbed a broom and disappeared into the back room. Sometime later, he reappeared, thanked the farmer for her kindness, then dashed out the door. Little did the farmer know, but clutched tight in the landlord's hand was the dull, tarnished coin. The greedy man had stolen it.
With this magic coin, I'll make tons and tons of rice, then sell it for tons and tons of money. I'll be the wealthiest man in the world.
The landlord was eager to get back to his mansion and take the coin for a spin. So, instead of crossing the frozen lake slowly and carefully, as he usually did, he began sprinting across the smooth, slick ice. But before he knew it, his feet started slipping.
Whoa.
And sliding.
Whoa, yes!
Until they skidded out from under him.
Wow!
And he landed right on his rear and... The landlord hit the ice so hard that two things happened. First, the ice cracked. Second, the magic coin he'd been clutching flew out of his hand and went rolling across the ice. The coin went rolling and rolling and rolling until it reached the jagged crack. Then it fell right through. The landlord plunged his hand into the frigid water. But it was too late. The magic coin was gone.
No!
Meanwhile, back at the farmer's cottage, the humble woman didn't have an inkling about the landlord's dirty deed. So the next morning, she did the usual and headed to her back room to fill up more bags of rice with her magic coin. She'd gotten so accustomed to this routine that she didn't even glance at the coin as she lifted it from the tin box and dropped it into the first bag. So you can imagine her surprise.
What?
When nothing happened.
What's going on?
The farmer grabbed the coin and examined it.
How odd! The magic coin the old woman gave me was all dull and tarnished and had that strange writing on it. Yet this coin is so shiny and new.
The farmer tried to remember the last time she used the magic coin.
Let's see. That poor man dressed in rags came by last night, and he asked for some rice. Then he offered to come back here and do some tidying up, and then... Oh, no!
The farmer's heart sank as she realized what had happened. Whoever that poor man was, he had made off with her magic coin.
Well, this is swell. Now I'm all out of rice, and it's still the middle of winter. Without my magic coin, there's no way that I can feed myself. Not to mention my fellow villagers.
Just then, there was a knock at the door. When the farmer undid the latch, who should be standing there but a cluster of her fellow villagers, the ones she had been giving free bags of rice to all winter long. And each and every one of those villagers was carrying a basket of food.
These baskets are for you, friend.
We've brought fruits, vegetables,
breads, cheeses.
I even brought the carp I caught yesterday while I was ice fishing on your frozen lake.
The farmer was practically speechless.
But why? Why bring me all of these wonderful things?
Well, we wanted to thank you for all the generosity you've shown us.
With your free bags of rice.
All at once, the farmer's heart leapt and fell. She was touched by the villager's kindness, but she knew that without her magic coin, her days of giving out free bags of rice were over.
Well, that's very kind of you, friends. More than you know. Thank you.
No, friend.
Thank you.
Then the villagers loaded their baskets into the farmer's cottage and went back home.
My goodness! Such wonderful people! And such wonderful food! Maybe I'll cook up some of the carp the fishermen caught in the frozen lake. What a delicious dinner that will be!
The farmer reached into one of the baskets and picked up a big, glistening fish with large, thick scales. She laid the carp on the table and lifted her knife. But the moment she sliced into the fish's plump belly, the blade struck something hard.
Hmm! The carp must have swallowed something while it was swimming around under the ice. I wonder what it could be.
The farmer looked inside the carp's belly and discovered something very familiar. And do you know what it was? Here's a hint. It was round and dull and tarnished and covered in strange writing.
Oh my goodness! It's the magic coin!
Months later, the snows of winter finally gave way to the blossoms of spring, and the farmer got back to work in the rice fields. And if the weather got too cold or too hot, too dry or too wet, well, she had her magic coin as a backup. But otherwise, the farmer worked hard, day in and day out. As a result, she always had full bags of rice and a full belly. And thanks to her generous spirit, the rest of the village did, too.
Well, the third and final story in our 2020 Tanglewood Family Concert is called Naming the Tree. Versions of this tale come from Africa. The music you'll hear in this story is performed by BSO tuba player Mike Roylands. So, circle around, everyone, for Naming the Tree.
Long ago, back when animals ruled the earth, a great drought came to the land. Not one drop of rain fell from the sky, so the ground grew scorched, baked, and dusty, and the long, tall grass shriveled, withered, and wilted. The great drought led to a great famine, and the animals roamed the plains searching for something, anything, to fill their bellies. But they couldn't find a thing to eat. Until...
Wow!
Miraculously, sprouting up in the middle of the vast, sunburnt plains was a lofty, leafy tree with a thick, gnarled trunk. The tree's strong, sturdy branches were bursting with ripe, fragrant, juicy fruit, all of them different colors of the rainbow. As the animals gaped at the tree with watering mouths, Elephant used his strong gray trunk to grasp one of the plump fruits. He gave the fruit a tug, but it held fast to the branch.
Ah, just as I suspected.
Elephant let go of the fruit and turned to his fellow animals.
My friends, I've heard stories about this tree. Legend has it it's a magic tree, and its rainbow-colored fruit will cling to its branches and never come off, unless we can say the tree's name.
The animals were intrigued.
Okay.
So, what's the name of the tree, Elephant?
Yes. What's the name of the tree?
Tell us what it's called.
Tell us the name, please.
Oh, I can't wait to hear the name.
Elephant held up his trunk. The animals quieted down.
The truth is, my friends, I don't actually know the tree's name. The only one who does know is the king of the beasts himself, Lion. So, my question is, which one of you will go and ask Lion the name of the tree?
The animals exchanged a nervous glance. All of them knew that Lion lived far across the plains, over the hills, and deep within the jungle. The great creature rarely emerged from his den, and he was always grouchy, grumbly, and grumpy.
Aw, come on now, friends. Surely one of you can visit Lion and find out the name of the tree, so that we can enjoy this succulent, sweet-smelling fruit? Anyone? Anyone?
I'll do it, Elephant.
The animals all stared at Tortoise.
I'll go and ask Lion the name of the tree.
Elephant knelt down, lowered his trunk, and gave Tortoise's tiny head a gentle pat.
Oh, Tortoise, I appreciate your offer, but look at you. You're so small, so slow. By the time you return from Lion's den, all of us will have wasted away from hunger.
Elephant got back to his feet.
No. We want to send someone who's swift and nimble. Someone like...
His eyes darted from animal to animal.
Like Hare. Hare, why don't you go across the plains, over the hills and into the jungle to ask Lion the name of the tree?
Hare wiggled her slender ears and twitched her whiskery nose.
Well, I am swift. And nimble. The swiftest and nimblest, in fact. You know what? I'll do it.
So Swift Nimble Hare jumped across the plains, hopped over the hills, and leaped through the jungle, all the way to Lion's den.
Hi there, Lion. Do you have a minute?
Unbeknownst to Hare, Lion was about to settle down for a nap. The great beast lifted his shaggy golden head and rolled his big amber eyes.
I suppose I have a minute, but that's all. What is it, Hare?
Well, Lion, it hasn't rained in ages, and the animals are very hungry. But we found the magic tree in the middle of the plains, the one that grows juicy, rainbow-colored fruits. So I wonder, could you please tell me the tree's name?
Lion opened his mighty jaws and let out a yawn.
So, you wish to know the name of the magic tree in the middle of the plains that grows juicy, rainbow-colored fruits? The name of the tree is Awungalema.
Awungalema.
That's right. Say that name, and you and the other animals can eat as many juicy, rainbow-colored fruits as you want. Now beat it, Hare. I have a cat nap to take.
Hare's heart and legs were racing as she scurried away from Lion's den.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy! We'll be stuffing ourselves on juicy, rainbow-colored fruits in no time, thanks to my swift and nimble feet. Let's see how fast these babies can go.
Hare began sprinting faster.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
And faster.
Look at me!
And soon she was going so fast that as she burst out of the jungle and headed toward the hills, her paw got snagged in a vine hanging from a baobab tree.
Oh, no.
Hare wriggled this way and that as she scrambled to untangle herself from the creeper.
Oh, come on. Come on.
And when she finally broke free, she sped back over the hills and across the plains at such a breakneck pace, her slender body looked like a blur. When Hare returned to the magic tree, Elephant and the other animals leaned in with hopeful eyes and bated breath.
Well, Hare, tell us, what's the name of the tree?
Hare grinned.
Okay, everybody. The name of the tree is...
Hare racked her brain, trying to remember what Lion told her. But her unexpected tango with the vine had knocked the tree's name right out of her head.
The name is, I forgot.
The animals' faces dropped. Elephant shrugged.
That's okay, Hare. That's okay. We'll just have to send someone else.
Well, what about me?
Once again, all eyes turned to Tortoise.
I told you, Elephant. I'll do it. I'll go ask Lion the name of the tree.
Elephant shook his head.
That's very sweet of you, Tortoise. But like I said, you're just too small and slow. And besides, after what happened with Hare, we need someone who will actually remember what Lion tells them. Someone who won't forget. Someone who... Wait a minute!
His eyes lit up.
That's me! Elephants never forget!
It was true. Elephant had an excellent memory. So, with his wrinkly gray tail swinging behind him, Elephant set off for Lion's den to find out the name of the magic tree. The massive creature tromped across the plains, tramped over the hills, and trundled through the jungle all the way to Lion's den.
Good day, Lion. Can we talk?
After Hare left Lion's den, the king of beasts was finally able to conk out and grab some Z's, so he was none too pleased when Elephant lumbered in and roused him from his snooze.
Ugh. What is it, Elephant? I'm trying to sleep.
I'm sorry, Lion. It's just that we haven't seen rain in forever, and all the animals are famished, and...
Let me guess. You wish to know the name of the magic tree in the middle of the plains that grows juicy, rainbow-colored fruits. The name of the tree is Awungalema.
Awungalema?
You've got it. Say that name, and you and the other animals can eat as many juicy, rainbow-colored fruits as you want. Now leave me be. I've been trying to get my 40 winks, and I have at least 39 more to go.
Elephant was beaming from big floppy ear to big floppy ear as he stamped away from Lion's den.
Oh, this is wonderful! We'll be devouring that juicy rainbow-colored fruit for days and days, thanks to my marvelous memory. My mind is as tight as a drum. It's as sticky as a spider web.
Elephant picked up his pace as he chuckled to himself.
My mind's as sharp as a tack, as absorbent as a sponge.
Elephant was so busy praising his marvelous memory that as he stomped out of the jungle and headed toward the hills, he didn't notice a fallen log blocking his path. Before he knew what was happening, he stumbled over the log.
Whoa!
And his huge gray body came crashing to the ground. Elephant gritted his teeth as he struggled to stand up.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
And when he was finally back on his feet...
Thank goodness.
He waddled back over the hills and across the plains as quick as his wrinkly gray legs could carry him. When he returned to the tree, the other animals were trembling with anticipation.
Elephant!
You're back!
Do you know the name of the tree?
You have to tell us what it is.
Please, tell us!
All right, friends. The name of the tree is...
Elephant scanned his brain, trying to recall what Lion said. But the surprise trip over the log had erased his memory.
The name is... I forgot.
Elephant bowed his head.
I'm sorry, friends. But just because Hare couldn't remember the tree's name and I couldn't remember the tree's name... It doesn't mean that nobody can remember the tree's name. Surely somebody else can give it a go?
For a moment, all the animals were quiet. And then...
Oh, for Pete's sake!
Tortoise spoke up.
How many times do I have to tell you, Elephant? I'll do it. I'll go and ask Lion the name of the tree.
She cocked her tiny head.
And I'll remember it, too.
Then, with her short green legs inching along, Tortoise crawled across the plains, crept over the hills, and plodded through the jungle. She traveled all night, and when she reached Lion's den, it wasn't yet dawn, and the King of Beasts was still fast asleep.
Excuse me, Lion? I hope I'm not disturbing you.
When Lion heard Tortoise's voice, he peeled one eye open and scowled.
Actually, you are disturbing me, Tortoise. I was having the most wonderful dream.
I apologize, Lion, but...
No. I know exactly what you're going to say. You wish to know the name of the magic tree in the middle of the plains that grows juicy, rainbow-colored fruits. Well, for the last time, the name of the tree is Awungalema.
Awungalema.
Indeed. Say that name, and you and the other animals can eat as many juicy, rainbow-colored fruits as you want. Now please go away. This beast needs his beauty rest.
Tortoise repeated the tree's name as she crept away from Lion's den.
Awungalema! Awungalema! Awungalema!
She repeated it one way as she inched through the jungle.
Awungalema! Awungalema! Awungalema!
Then another way.
Awungalema! Awungalema! Awungalema!
Then another way.
Awungalema, awungalema, awungalema.
And when she left the jungle and shuffled over the hills.
Awungalema, awungalema, awungalema.
The name was etched into her memory.
Awungalema, awungalema, awungalema.
After many hours, Tortoise finally returned to the tree. By the time she arrived, the other animals were sprawled out on the sun-baked earth, their eyes closed, their bellies empty. But when Tortoise raised her head, puffed out her chest, and called out,
"Awoongalema!"
Everyone rose up, and as they did, the juicy, fragrant, rainbow-colored fruits popped right off the tree's branches and fell toward the ground. The animals sang, the animals cheered, the animals ate rainbow-colored fruit till their bellies were bursting. And that was the last time they looked down on Tortoise for having a scrawny body. Instead, they looked up to her for having a strong mind. And rather than poo-poo her slow feet, they praised her steady ones.
Hey guys, it was great to be with you, even virtually. And thanks so much for listening to the 2020 Tanglewood Virtual Family Concert. I'm Thomas Wilkins, the Youth and Family Concerts Conductor for the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and it's been a pleasure joining you for this hour of music and story. And now, to tell us more about Circle Round and the exciting actors we heard today, here's host Rebecca Shear.
Thanks, Thomas. If you like what you heard in this year's Tanglewood Family Concert, ask a grown-up to subscribe to Circle Round. They can find us on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app they prefer. We release episodes every Tuesday. You can find all of our episodes on our website, wbur.org/circleround. While you're there, you can learn how to get the Circle Round soundtrack. You can find out more about the instruments you hear in our stories. You can also download and print out more than 100 coloring pages, one for each Circle Round episode, all created by our artist, Sabina Hahn. Again, that's wbur.org/circleround. The stories in this year's Tanglewood Family Concert, Every Other Friday, The Farmer's Coin, and Naming the Tree, were adapted by me, Rebecca Shear. They were edited by Circle Round's executive producer, Catherine Brewer. Our music was composed by Eric Shimalonis and performed by world-class Boston Symphony Orchestra members Rachel Childers, Danny Kim, Ben Levy, Cynthia Myers, Suzanne Nelson, and Mike Roylands. The actors you heard today are Kevin Corbett, Gabriella Fernandez-Coffey, Dolores King-Williams, Jessica Rao, Jefferson Russell, Mark Saul, Kimberly Schraff, Alexia Trainer, Chris Tucci, Craig Wallace, and Laura K. Welsh. And special thanks to our celebrity guests, Gildert Jackson and Melora Hardin in Every Other Friday, Jin Ha and Greta Jung in The Farmer's Coin, and Chloe Coleman in Naming the Tree. Big thanks to the Boston Symphony Orchestra for partnering with us on this summer series. Special shout-outs to Thomas Wilkins, Emily Cotton, Beth Mullins, Leslie Wu Foley, and the entire BSO web team. Circle Round is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR station. I'm Rebecca Shear. Thanks for circling around with us.